Well, this is the season of light. It's the season of light and the celebration of light in Judaism, with Hanukkah in Christianity, with Christmas. Wiccans and pagans in the crowd will be looking forward to the solstice, and Eid is coming up on the Muslim calendar. This is the time when we light candles and celebrate the light as the days grow shorter, as the great days grow darker. Celebrating the light is what religions do because it's what human beings do. Think of the light as the metaphor and how universal it is. We talk about the Enlightenment. In the Hebrew Scriptures, it says to the people to be a light unto the nations. In Christian scriptures, it talks about being the light. The early followers of Jesus were not called Christians. Before the second century, they were called followers of the light. Think of our metaphor of the Enlightenment. Think of our Unitarian Universalist chalice, calling people to the light, to be enlightened, to celebrate reason, to celebrate life, to celebrate the existence of light in our lives. And how many metaphors there are around that issue of light unnamed. The light of love, the light of that connects us with one another, the energy that connects us with one another, how we can lighten, bad pun, but it's still true, each other's burdens by being together, by coming together and celebrating that the light is something persistent and important, and all of our religious traditions acknowledge what seems to be the most natural and universal metaphor across every time and culture and language. As we are in the midst of the holiday season of Christmas and Hanukkah primarily, although to say two things and then use the word primarily is actually bad writing, and I apologize, my editor will see me in the morning. It's really, I get into trouble with this, okay, so don't report me, and then maybe I'll turn the mic off. Hanukkah and Christmas are not the same holidays. I get into trouble because I don't get upset when Christians call Hanukkah, well, it's the Jewish Christmas, and I don't think that that's meant insultingly. They're not exactly the same, but they come out of the same seeds, the same needs. They grow in the common soil of our human experience, and they can't be separated. If I were a separatist, I wouldn't be a Unitarian Universalist. I look for a place where people can bring our own unique and shared traditions together and be influenced by one another, because I think that this is the definition of culture. This is how we grow. You can have a model of sharing where this is the right way and you'll do it my way, or I'll have to roll over you because yours is all wrong. Or we can acknowledge what is clearly historically true and almost always an option. We can go both and. What is the modern celebration of Hanukkah? Well, it's feasting with potato latkes. It is giving gifts. And it's spinning dreidels. Well, let's see. Potato latkes were never enjoyed by the Maccabees for a very simple reason. The potatoes were all in the New World. They didn't have them. Our ancient tradition is at least post-Columbus. The dreidel is a German word, drehen, meaning to turn, for a little top. And the gift-giving was clearly influenced by Christmas. And take Christmas. Let's see, when I think of Christmas, I think of a Christmas tree. I dream of a white Christmas, and I celebrate Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. Well, the Christmas tree comes from Norse mythology. White Christmas comes from Irving Berlin. And Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer also has Jewish origins with Johnny Marks. You can't pull the fabric of our society apart or deny how we have woven together over time. How Christians wove together and took in the creation of Christmas all different kinds of stories, and including the date. It's no attack on Christianity to say that the December 25th birthday of Jesus is highly improbable, and it is not a date that is given within the Bible. If you actually read the Bible and the nativity narrative seriously, and you know something about Roman traditions and when people collected taxes, and all peoples have always collected taxes, you understand that it's much more likely that his birth would have been in the spring. But December 25th is the birthday of Jesus, of Saturn, and of Mithra. It is the time when people have said yes to the light and yes to life. And that's the hugely important part. Hanukkah is this time that says the light isn't going to go out. It's not about the real oil. It's about the metaphorical spark. It's not so much about how the Maccabees did, and they didn't do very well after the war. They were better warriors than they were governors. Rings a bell. But it is the strength of the metaphor. It starts with one candle, and then the second night, two candles, and then the third night, three candles, until eight candles and the shamus are all ablaze. So that not only does the light not go out against all reasonable expectations, the light grows stronger. It casts a greater light and greater warmth and greater beauty over time. It doesn't fade. That's a metaphor alert. It doesn't fade. When we look at these two great holidays and maybe even holy days, in their symbolic senses, what we see are, again, more areas of commonality. Areas of, if one wants to have a sense of faith in the traditional way and meaning of faith, it is against all reasonable expectations. Over 2,000 years after the Maccabees and after the Syrian-Greek occupation of the Holy Land, there are still Jews. That really goes against any kind of historical obvious outcome. 2,000 years after the life and the death of a wisdom teacher in a small corner of the mighty Roman Empire, a wisdom teacher who raised no armies, who slew no opponents, who didn't sit down and write a book, he's still remembered. And these two improbable faiths, improbable traditions, still exist and still influence and light and occasionally cast shadows and darkness on the world, but there still is a coherent self-memory and identification of these traditions. Now, no tradition is pure. They have all picked up influences and changed and grown and maybe wouldn't even be very recognizable to the people who lived 2,000 years ago. I run a thought problem from time to time about what would happen if a Maccabee walked into this building if it were functioning as a temple and would look around and not recognize very much except Torah. and you wonder at what Jesus' reaction would be to modern Christianity and not so modern Christianity as you look at the huge spectrum of belief in all of our faiths. And that's, again, part of the genius of survival of Judaism and of Christianity is flexibility, is intellectual biodiversity. That if you want to find out what Jews believe, do you go over here on the far left with humanistic Jews who are way, way past even Unitarians theologically with actively doctrinaire, faithful atheism to Reconstructionists, to Reform, to Conservative, to Orthodox, to Ultra-Orthodox, to various Hasidic branches? If you want to know what Christians believe, do you start out, well, God only knows which Episcopal Synod to look at this moment, but do you go for the English or the Ugandan or the Fresnovian diocese? Do you go to Roman Catholics, to Greek Orthodox, to Syrian Orthodox, to Baptists, to Anabaptists, to Socinians, to Unitarians, to UCC? Where do you go in all these spectrums? And I would submit to you that part of the genius of survival is the large tent. Is the large tent that is engaged in conversation, that's engaged in argument, that keeps minds sharp and, with work, hearts open. The narrower the definition, the more fragile, the more likely it is to turn to powder, the more likely it is to fall, not on the facts of did it happen like this. If Judaism had to survive on the historicity of Hanukkah, there would be no Judaism. Christianity had to survive on the historicity of Christmas, there would be no Christianity. It survives because we are not all things to all people, but we are many things, and we work together to try to fashion something that is physically and spiritually nourishing in real time to and for each other. It's not a set of dogmatic doctrines, but a light and an inspiration that moves us to do those really fundamental religious commandments, to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, to plead for the widow and orphan, to do the hardest of all of the religious obligations, to walk humbly with the God of your choice during the holiday and holy day of your choice. I'm not a separatist. I believe in moving the music, the feast, the festivals together, not to blur and blot out the distinctions and those things that are unique in all of our traditions, but to share and to accept and to be influenced consciously and intentionally by those ideas and thoughts and practices and rituals that inform our souls and make us better. I wrote a piece for the newspaper on this theme of Hanukkah and Christmas and how they have been woven together, and I sent it out to my group, including my cousin, who her name is Nina Dobra Hoffman, and she lives in Charlotte, and she's Orthodox. So I got back a letter remonstrating me with, how can you mix them? Don't you understand the irony of all of that? Judaism and the Maccabees were about fighting the Greeks and fighting Hellenism, so that when you weave it together with Christmas and the Greek definition of what became Christianity, it makes a mockery out of Hanukkah. No, it doesn't. Judaism survived not simply by lighting lights, but by thinking, by arguing, by adapting, and by adopting. When you look at the great philosophers and the great thinkers in Judaism, from Philo Judaicus of Alexandria in the first century to Maimonides, their intellectual lives were about. Not choosing between philosophy and revelation, but making a deal. Trying to encounter the other system and find what was useful and how to make it their own. It was an encounter with Hellenism that gave Judaism the intellectual light to survive. It wasn't a question that the Maccabees separated Jews once and for all from Western civilization. Hardly. That was a battle. The real triumph was people like Philo and Maimonides, who took the philosophers and brought it into the mainstream of the conversation. So one of the questions we can ask ourselves in moments like this is, what is there in the practice that other people have, who may be more religiously observant than we normally are, who may have other theologies, who may have other practices and rituals? Is there something that we can learn? Is there something that we can take from them? What will the analog be in future generations of potato latkes and Christmas trees? What will we take from our world to take into our homes and into our hearts and put into our practice, not as a substitute for being good and decent and thoughtful, but as a reminder to be good and decent and thoughtful? It is so important that we remember that ritual is not a replacement for righteousness or for right acts. Ritual is a reminder of how to be with each other. We have a ritual of gift giving. That's terrific, and there will be 15,000 sermons preached in Jewish pulpits and in Christian pulpits about the wretched excesses of this commercial time, and those sermons are all right, and I'll sign on and endorse them. However, giving gifts that count at Hanukkah and at Christmas, or at Eid, sharing the meals with the poor, those are the essential issues of religious practice. It really isn't about the things. As I grow older, I have far less of a need for things. I'm much more interested in time. Kid, don't send me a download for my iPod. Come on over for dinner. Or have us over for dinner. The gifts that count are the gifts of our presence, not presence with a T, our presence to each other. Being willing to spend time, not the substitute of high impact quality time, but actual, real time with one another. The gifts that we give our children is knowledge of ourselves. The gifts that we give each other are the experiences that we put into the bank with each other as couples, as families. That's the heart of Christmas. That's the heart of Hanukkah. That's the heart of what the metaphors of these great holidays and holy days are about. One of the prayers that goes on in Judaism is there's one called the Hinani, which just means I'm here. Showing up for each other is pretty important. That's where it all starts. And when you look at the images of Christmas and of the nativity stories, that's a very small part of the gospel narrative, what you see are people showing up to attend a birth. Great kings and not so great shepherds, people of different races, different classes, different occupations, showing up to be with one another. The most powerful thing that we say to each other, the most powerful flame that we make against the darkness is, here I am with you, for you, to spend time, precious time, precious time in our limited time here with one another. This is the greatest gift. We are told from time to time that there's a choice between cursing the darkness or lighting a candle. As the days grow shorter, as the sky turns, well, today blue, but often gray and cold, as the leaves drop, our spirits can drop also. And Hanukkah, 9 candles lit against the darkness. Christmas, a star leading people to the east and a new day. These promises are given at the beginning of winter as the seasons change. And these promises are kept in Judaism at Passover and as there is a journey east towards a new day and a new sunrise. And in Christianity, this promise is kept at Easter as the sun rises again and light returns in the spring to our hearts, to our world, to our lives, and to our hopes. It is a joyful noise we make in the dead of winter, and it is a joyful light that together we light. Hanukkah and Christmas, they are the warp and the woof of traditions woven into a rich tapestry that is the fabric of the society that we share together.